Working Cows Podcast, Episode 48.
Welcome to the podcast that gives producers a platform to discuss and share paradigm-challenging practices. Practices that have increased the effectiveness of their operation and the joy that their families have received from this lifestyle.
This is Clay Connery, host of the Working Cows Podcast, just back with another episode. Before we get into our guest today, I wanted to make you aware of something pretty cool that happened in my hometown. A young lady that attends the church where I'm pastor was elected homecoming queen, which is cool in and of itself, but this young lady is also autistic. And it was just a really proud moment for me as a Belfouche native to see the students of Belfouche kind of teach all of us in Belfouche about a little bit about what true beauty is like. So if you want to check that story out, head on over to facebook.com/workingcows. It will be pinned there as the pinned story for a little while. So if you want to check that out, facebook.com/workingcows, we'll leave it up there for you to read and check that story out. Pretty cool stuff. So on to our guest today. Troy Hadrick is a rancher from North Central South Dakota near Falkton. He has been using GeneMax testing in his herd, and I wanted to talk to him just a little bit about what he has been accomplishing through that. So Troy, thanks for joining me today on the Working Cows Podcast.
Yeah, glad to be on today. Appreciate the chance to share a little bit about our cattle herd and what we've done with it over the last several years to really try and improve our genetics.
So you guys, how long have you been using GeneMax testing on your operation?
So we started back in 2014 for the first time. Prior to that, a few years prior to that, we had set out to sort of figure out how we could increase revenue, make our cattle more valuable, essentially, without having to just, you know, simply by running more numbers, I guess. And of course, remember coming off the drought of 2012, feed was tough and pasture was tight. And so we were trying to figure out other ways to get, instead of getting bigger, figure out how we get better. We decided to try and produce cattle that we could market on a quality-based grid system, and which essentially means that we're trying to get cattle that it will grade in the certified Angus beef and prime. And so we set out on that direction with our genetics we were using. Before we even got the first set of data back, started kind of looking at some of the DNA tests that were out there, and specifically looking at the Zoetis test, talking about or their GeneMax and Focus and GeneMax Advantage. And so it was pretty interesting to see, look at maybe the potential of the test. I think, you know, at the beginning, we were still trying to figure out how exactly we would utilize it. And that actually, it took me a while. You know, there's obviously a cost involved in the thing, and you get this data back, and there's always, I guess, the fear. It's kind of easy sometimes to spend that money, and then, you know, you get this sheet of paper in the mail and it says, here's your test results. And I didn't want to just take that and say, oh, that looks good or that looks bad or whatever, and throw it in the file cabinet, right? And then just kind of walk away. It's like, we really, you know, when we get this information, we have to know how to utilize it. And so I kind of spent quite a bit of time trying to figure that out before we ever took a tissue sample on a calf even. And so once I kind of got that figured out and kind of squared that away in my head, then we moved forward with starting to use the test.
And how have you guys changed what you're doing? What's different now on your cow herd or in your management than it was before you started testing?
So prior to testing and prior to, you know, me and my two cousins taking over management of the ranch back in 2012, we'd been a pretty traditional cow herd where we weaned our calves. We had a backgrounding yard here, so we would background our calves for a while. And then every February, Before we get ready to start calving in the spring, we would sell those calves at Sale Barn. And I figured that if we were going to put the effort into making these cattle more valuable, we really needed to own them a lot longer, which is a big change and real, pretty kind of a big hurdle to get over mentally as much as anything. But then financially, you just got to figure out how do you make this work? You can own those cattle longer. You've got more risk for a longer time. So you got to do a better job of doing some risk management, risk protection, those types of things. And so we switched then in 2014, we were able to get the first set of data back on a set of calves, would have been the 2012 calf crop, or born in 13. And, we owned those cattle all the way through. We retained ownership on them all the way till they're literally hanging on the rail. It's packing plant is when we sell them. And that way they collect the data on the carcasses and then we get paid bonuses for cattle that grade better. And of course you have the risk then of getting, taking some deductions too, if they really don't meet the mark. So that first set of calves is a little scary because you just don't quite know where you're at. But really a very significant change for us in, instead of selling feeder calves every, winter, early spring, to owning those cattle all the way till they're finished.
What was the results on that first set of calves that you guys, tested and retained ownership on?
Yeah. So the first set of calves, so these would have basically been kind of where we started off at more or less, these would have been some of the first AI calves that we had, but still we ended up basically that first set of calves when we got the data back in 2014, they were average is what they were. They ran 89% choice or better. They were running 32% certified Angus beef acceptance rate. We didn't have any cattle that went prime. They plus the grid. We got back $46 a head in premiums for those cattle. Okay, so they were essentially average cattle. That's average. When you look at averages on quality grade for cattle in the United States, it's about a 30% CAB acceptance rate. Primes run 2 to 3 to sometimes upwards of 5%, but you don't ever see it. Typically you're in that 3 to 4% range in kind of night, they've been running 70% choice. And so we were somewhat average that next year. Then when we got some of that data back, we, the next calf crop is the ones that we did the GeneMax focus test on the steers and was really interesting to see some differences in there. And so we had some of the same sired cattle from the year before, would have been half brothers to the year before's calves. And we got GeneMax data on them. And so we kind of looked at the data, the GeneMax data on them. We looked at the actual carcass data from their steer mates the year before. And we said, okay, that, so if, we were able to say, okay, this number that GeneMax is giving us, this is how those cattle performed in the feed yard last year. And then we saw that there were some other cattle out of different sire groups that were doing way better actually. And then we looked at our cleanup calves and they weren't that far behind. And so that first time we got the GeneMax focus data back, it gave us a tremendous amount of confidence that we could retain ownership on all of our calves because we did not do that the first time. But this next year it said, wow, we should retain ownership on all of our calves and market them on the grid too. And the data, the GeneMax test was right. When we got the data back on that next set of calves, we went from 0% prime to 13% prime. We went to a 97% choice or better. Our CAB acceptance rate more than doubled up to 65%. And so, and just the way the market was, the grid premiums weren't too much higher than the year before. We went from about $46 to $49. But we could see some huge potential in there. And that's when we started saying, look, this test gives us a tremendous amount of information that we can make very good decisions with. And when you've got good data and you make good decisions, typically, it's going to improve your bottom line. And that's what we've seen.
Did you guys tell me a little bit about the operation? I mean, is you guys are putting up some crops and that's your feed base or how does that look for you guys?
Right. So we're in North Central South Dakota near Falkton. And, yeah, we're fairly diversified. So my two cousins and I, and so we farm as well. I got one cousin that kind of takes care of most of the farming side of things. I manage the cow herd. And, so we raise corn and soybeans, sometimes some wheat, put up some alfalfa, that time. So we're typically able to raise most of our own feed base here. We're spread out on pastures. We have several smaller pastures. So it's, one of the challenges is you got small groups of cattle in lots of different places. So we try and be portable, with our facilities and our equipment to move around and do some things where the cattle are instead of having to kind of wait to bring them home. But you know, around here, I'd say we're fairly kind of a typical type operation, you know, fairly diversified that way. So, but it's been interesting. You know, it's kind of strange when you look at the farming side of things, and all the technology that's gone into that lately, and you don't bat an eye about switching how you do that stuff. I mean, a new GMO varieties come on board and you say, yep, absolutely, that looks good. Auto steer comes online. I mean, you don't think twice about that, but for some reason the cattle business, where you tend to be more stuck on tradition and say, as new technologies come in, we're a little less apt to take advantage of that. And I think one of the things that, Gene Max testing does and this DNA testing does is it gives us the ability to, apply some precision ranching, just like precision farming has done. And we're really managing the individuals. We know individual DNA profiles and all of the females as they go back into our herd. Just like now, you can manage, you know, almost down to the square foot in a field. And you don't treat a field as one field anymore. You have variable rates and you do all those different things for different spots in your field. And on your cow herd, I think we got to start working towards managing the individual and not the herd. And that's what we've tried to implement.
Has the testing, are there any other tests you're using other than the Gene Max and the Focus?
So the Focus is the test that's is really meant to use on Angus based steers. And so that first year we did the steers and we got that data back on the steers and it was so exciting. We decided to also do all of our heifers that year. And the heifer test that you typically use is called Gene Max Advantage and it gives you more data back. It's a more expensive test, but you get more data back and it shows you some more maternal characteristics that you might be interested in and kind of helps you on your decision making as far as retaining heifers to put back into the herd. And so we have used the Gene Max Advantage test then every year since then on all of our females. And I've told a lot of people, you know, this Gene Max Advantage, there's a couple ways to use it. And one is, yeah, it's going to show you, I mean, it's going to rank all of your females. So you're going to have a top and everybody has a bottom and then you've got a couple options there. One is you can lop off the bottom. You can sell those as feeders, get rid of them. But the other way to look at it too, and we've done this depending on the year is say, okay, yeah, we've got a bottom, but we know what their hole is. We know why she's in the bottom. And if we know that information, then we can mate those cattle more appropriately. And to fix them essentially, before we didn't necessarily know, you know, maybe they didn't look good or you kept them back and they didn't raise a good calf or whatever the situation was. We kind of know that stuff in advance. That's really helped as well. And so we can fix some things before they become a problem or we know what the issues are and we can adjust accordingly as we move forward. So
how has, the testing changed how you manage replacement females?
Well, essentially, like I've told you, we've tried to retain as many females back every year as possible and give them all a chance to breed. And then we put a lot of reproductive pressure on those heifers, though. So we've got the data. We know what's good about them. We know what's bad about them. And you know, the nice thing is, look, they can all kind of look the same standing out in the pen. But just like buying a vehicle, you kind of want to know what's under the hood in those things. And just because they look shiny and nice on the outside doesn't mean they're going to run very good. And the same way as goes with cows. So now the Gene Max test allows us to basically open up the hood, see what's underneath there, and then we can do one of two things. Either, yeah, she's going to end up going with the steers down at the feed yard in Kansas, or, yeah, we're going to give her a chance to breed, but we know she's She's got some holes genetically that we want to fix, and we're going to mate her appropriately so her offspring hopefully are quite a bit better. And it's worked out really well. I mean, if you look through the 4 years of data that we have, as far as the data off the retained ownership, those first 2 years, like I was mentioning, there wasn't a whole lot of difference in the actual grid premiums. Then we got to the third year and we saw a jump. We went from, we're at $46 head premium to $49 head premium. And then all of a sudden we jumped to $78 a head in premium. And then you went forward one more year into the calves that we harvested in 2017, and it jumped almost to $100 head premium. And the reason we saw, you know, kind of the flat line the first 2 years and then really taking off on quite a trajectory was the females that we initially gene max tested are now in the herd and giving us calves that are going, we're retaining ownership on now. And so the drastic improvement in the offspring of the females that we're putting in really showed up essentially on that bottom line. And you can say, well, maybe you hit a hot market or you didn't hit a hot market or whatever. You know, we've looked at it both ways. We're able to take those calves and take the data and essentially put them on a standardized grid so we can compare them year over year. When you do that, those cattle have, they're $7 a hundredweight more valuable over the course of those 4 years. And when you look at it and say, well, whatever the market was, we've doubled the grid premiums. So we've tried to look at it different ways, because you're killing cattle at different times of year and those things, and market obviously fluctuates. But no matter which way we've sliced it, those cattle are more valuable and they bring back more return.
Have you seen a change in length of time in the herd with your females as a result of these tests?
You know, so we're, that's an interesting question. So I'd say yes and no. No, I would say no in the aspect that we've only got a couple, you know, we're 4 years into this project, I guess. So we can't necessarily say, oh yeah, they're turned into 12 and 15 year old cows or something. But the other thing the reason I would say is maybe causing a little more turnover is because the females that we're producing this year compared to 3-4 years ago are so much better. And so we've actually accelerated a little bit how quick we rotate some new females into the herd. And I think we're able then to market some bred cows is now kind of the goal. Let's market some bred cows every year and more of a running age cow, 5, 6, 7, 8 year old cows, because we're reloading the gun, every year, and the bullets we're putting in are bigger and faster. We're able to replace those females quicker, and we know it's going to give us a return faster. So there's always different ways to look at it. I think our cows are better. The whole time we've done this, we've increased the grid premiums and the quality grades. We've reduced our cow size. That was something that was one of our goals. So we're running more cows on the same amount of acres, running more on the same amount of feed throughout the year, and bringing more money back in as far as quality. So,
can you give me a specific example of how you guys are able to manage the individual more than the herd as a whole? Kind of like you were talking about the variable rate planting.
Right.
You know, I think those are correlated, right, is what you're saying?
Yeah. Yeah. So essentially where we're really seeing it is in our breeding program, right? So as we're AIing cows coming in, you know, we know who they are. We know what they are, and we're going to breed them a specific way based on that individual. So as they're lining up, coming down the chute, to come into the breeding barn, you know, we're looking to seeing who they are. And then, we've kind of tried to put together, we're not making that decision right then and there. We've basically, you know, done that beforehand and said, okay, this cow, when she comes in, this is what she's going to get bred to. We've got all that worked out. So as they come in, we just need to read ear tags and, look her up and say, yep, okay, this is what we're breeding her to. So we're not just, kind of going through the semen catalog and picking out one bull or two bulls every year. We're using two or three bulls that are mated specifically to certain cows. And we do a lot less of the shotgun method where you just, use this semen on a few different cows and see what happens. And I think we're able to more precisely match up those genetics and get a better result. And this is what's really fun too, is that that first year we retained ownership, we AI'd, essentially we AI'd in 2012 that summer. Those calves were born in 2013. By the time they're to a finished weight, it's 2014. And so from the time we made those breeding decisions in 2012 to the time we got the data back to see if they were good decisions or not, took us 26 months. Okay. Well, we've already made two more breeding decisions in the meantime. And so if that first one didn't work out, we didn't know, we might have made the same mistake for 3 years in a row, right? And you're going to pay that price for 3 years in a row. With the GeneMax testing, essentially, once the day that calf is born, we can pull a tissue sample and send it in, and we can see, hey, did that combination work? You know, what are the numbers telling us here? Does it look like this calf's got a real future? Does it look like, no, for whatever reason, that combination doesn't work? And so we can actually get data right away before we breed the following year. I mean, we can have it within 11 months, 10, 11 months time. And so if we are making a mistake, we're only going to make it maybe 1 year. And we'll say, yep, I don't think that we want to do that. Let's look at some other options. And so that's, to me, is what's really cool, because we talk a lot in cattle about gestational lag, right? And we get one calf a year, and we, forever jealous of the pig guys. It's because they get two and a half litters a year. And so they can change those genetics way quicker. I think this gives us the ability to change our genetics very quickly as well. Just because we make good decisions every year and we don't repeat any mistakes.
Has this process been faster than you assumed, or slower than you assumed, or about like you assumed, as far as the ability to impact, well, the pocketbook? Let's just be real about
right.
it. How's that time scale played out for you guys?
It accelerated our time schedule by a bunch. I really thought when we started down the road, my goal was, in 10 years, I hope that we are, we're getting to where we want to be, essentially. I never dreamed that in 4 years' time, we would have numbers like this. I mean, we did in 4 years what I thought would take at least 10. What we'll accomplish in 10 years is probably, looking at the time schedule now, maybe what you hope to accomplish in a lifetime. I mean, I just am really amazed, because I think we all have it in our head that you can't change the genetics in your cow herd very fast. You can if you want to. And I think, but it takes goals. You've got to put a plan together. You got to stick with that plan. And work it. You can't start off with this one plan and then all of a sudden next year somebody's telling you some other story and you're like, oh, well, maybe that sounds better. And you switch gears before you ever even hit the ground running. And so, yeah, the accelerated time schedule has been really phenomenal to me, just really impressed that what we can do. And I've heard guys say too, say, oh, geez, if I try and do this in my cow herd, by the time I get it done, there won't be grid premiums, or if everybody's doing it, there aren't any premiums for cattle that grade choice or whatever. And my thought is too, look, if tomorrow for some reason the market says, we don't want prime cattle anymore, we don't want choice cattle anymore, we want them all select, man, I can turn this ship around in 3-4 years, we'll be wherever the market wants us to be. I don't foresee that happening, because it's never has been that way, but yeah, I mean, I think we can really move. So
yeah, if anything, I think the demand is going to go the other way, higher and higher quality,
yep.
It's going to continue to, as the market becomes more and more niched down, I think there's going to be that demand increase for higher and higher quality beef. What are some of the challenges you guys have faced? Any challenges that you guys have faced along the way?
Data management has become a huge challenge, more so than I was probably prepared for. We just generate so many numbers now. It's on the GeneMax data itself. It's on the carcass data that we're getting back, collecting the data on the calves while they're here at the ranch, all those types of things. And we know that if the data is in good usable form, we can really dive into it and see things in there that tell us what to do. We don't have to, we don't make guesses on how to breed things. We don't make guesses on how to market cattle. The numbers tell us what to do. If it's not in usable form, it's just a whole bunch of spreadsheets that are scattered all over your desktop on your computer, then it makes it really difficult. And so we've spent a lot of time trying to figure out how to put that data together in a useful package, how to make it sortable, do all those things. And I've been fortunate that the guys at US Premium Beef, where we harvest our cattle, they've helped us out a lot on that. They've got a spreadsheet that they've built where we can plug all of our carcass data into it and look at theoreticals based on what the market might be, see what they actually did. We can sort by sire groups, cow age. I mean, you can narrow it down to where, you know, I think we've got nearly 500 head in that spreadsheet now, and I can narrow it down probably to find the, you know, the one calf that was born on Easter Sunday that had a mother that was 4 years old. You know, I mean, you can just about boil it down to those types of things. And the first time we really dove into that spreadsheet and was playing around and just doing some of those sorting things, all of a sudden, you know, we found a set of calves out of one particular sire that was running at a clip of like 50% primes. You know, when they're hitting within the herd, you know, we're at like 18% prime that year. But we figured out all of them were coming out of one sire group. And that takes some sorting, and it takes some being able to kind of manipulate the data to find that information. But once we found that within the data, it's like, well, this makes some easier breeding decisions for us, right? We want to make more of those. And we knew we could. And so within a year's time, we doubled our primes again because we started concentrating on those genetics and those cows. And, you know, last year we were at 35% prime, which is, you know, we're nearly 10 times the national average when it comes to prime. So,
And so is the key to this deal is knowing which cow is going to mate best with which bull. Is that kind of what you guys have found to be the most valuable information from this testing?
Yeah. And just, yeah, knowing how to mate those cows, seeing what's worked, what hasn't, just not making mistakes, I think is the big thing. And then just having that confidence then to retain that ownership and, you know, not fall into the idea that, oh, I don't know, you know, I'm scared to do it, or what if this happens? What if that happens? And so we're going to go to the sale barn with them, you know, and if that's what you want to do, that's great. But if you're putting a lot of effort into your genetics, it's at the end of those steer's life where those genetics really pay off. And, you know, as a cow calf guy, if you're selling his feeders, man, you've done all the work. You bred that cow, you calved that calf out then, you got it through the summer, you weaned the thing, you backgrounded it, it's all ready to go. And the last 5 months of its life, when it's just going to stand in a feed yard down in Kansas, all of a sudden you sell it to somebody else and they reap a ton of the benefits off of your genetics and all of your hard work. And that's when we decide, I'm like, look, we work too hard on these calves to give them to somebody else and kind of get an average price of a pen. They're again, selling them at an average price and comparing them to everybody else's when I feel like our genetics are better. So that's when we started retaining ownership, and it gave us the confidence to do it. And that's what's probably been one of the big things that pushed us along.
You mentioned cow size. Have there been any other phenotypical changes that you guys have noticed in your herd as a result of the way you're selecting and different things like that?
So, yeah, you know, what's been interesting is the cow size, and that was one of our goals. And then I've had people say, well, you know, smaller cows are going to raise smaller calves, right? Well, the data kind of shows something different to us. Essentially, our average hot carcass weight has stayed very steady through the first 3 years of the data. You get into year four in 2017, and we saw our hot carcass weight drop 30, 40 pounds. But the interesting part of that is that's a management thing. That carcass weight was down that year just because the market told us, it said, look, if we want cattle that are ready right now. We don't want cattle in 3 or 4 weeks. And so we accelerated our selling schedule on those finished cattle. So they went to town a little bit lighter. So on the surface, you can say, oh, well, those cattle were lighter, so they didn't bring as much. Well, the problem was the market was telling us, you know, in 3 or 4 weeks, yeah, your cattle are going to be heavier. We're not going to pay as much for them either. And so you've got to make some of those decisions. Obviously, along the way, it's not any different than selling feeder calves. I mean, you got to decide, you know, is today the best day to do it, or you're better off to wait 3 weeks or whatever the answer is. So those numbers can be manipulated by my influence. That's not necessarily an indicator of the performance level of the calves, but to have dropped, you know, a few hundred pounds probably off of our hot carcass weight or off of our cow size, and then be able to maintain carcass weights and increase performance. I think we're a lot of those things we like to tell ourselves in our head, or we can dismiss offhand. Like, you don't have to like what we do. You don't have to agree with our program. But the thing I tell people is you can't argue with our numbers. I mean, it's not stuff, we're not even doing the measuring on this stuff. I mean, this is being measured at the feed yard and at the packing plant. And so this, you know, you don't have to trust me, but we all need to, I think we can all agree that the numbers coming back from the plant are probably as good a set of data as we can. There's no bias in those. So
have you been through any kind of data management training or anything like that? You mentioned that as a challenge. Has that been something that you guys have sought out, or just the help from the feed yard has been enough?
So we're in the process now of trying to implement electronic tagging system into our herd. The last 2 years, we've put ultra high frequency ear tags in the cattle as they're going into the females as they go into the herd. Those tags we can read with a reader from 25 even up to 30 feet away. It's not like the little button tags. These are like a full size visual ear tag, and inside that ear tag is the antenna. And so we can read those. We can scan those from a ways away. You can set up antennas in your alleyways or your chute, and it will automatically read that and can pull up data. We don't have it fully implemented yet, but I've spent the last 2 or 3 years really researching and talking to lots of different companies, and we really struggled to find the program that would work for us. But I think we finally figured that out. There's a company called Fort Supply Technologies that's really integrated all of these different things. Because prior to this, it seemed like, you know, you've got this company over here that makes the wands, and this company over here makes the tags, and then somebody else makes the scale head, and on. I'm like, look, I need somebody to put this all together. I don't want to have to take all these pieces home and then try and make them all talk to each other. And then when it doesn't work, you know, they all blame the other one's technology or something. And so I think this is going to be the key for us. Just a matter of kind of getting it implemented, and then we'll be able to, it's all cloud based then. So, I mean, I can pull the data up on my phone. The data is all stored, you know, off site. So it's more secure probably than being on your computer in the house and you're risking it crashing without a backup or something. And so yeah, we're really excited about getting that implemented. Cause I think it will help us do a better job of data management, but it's been a lot of trial by fire to start with here.
So this is episode 48 of the Working Cows podcast. There will be a show notes page at workingcows.net/48. Any resources you would want me to put there? Any links you'd want me to put there for people to, if they want to check this out and kick the tires and think about starting their own genetic testing program? Anything I should be putting there?
Yeah, well, I think, you know, there's some different tests available out there. You know, our experience has been with Zoetis and the GeneMax test, and, you know, it's really worked solid for us. I, you know, tend to be skeptical on things probably. So the first time we got the GeneMax data and then on some calves, and then we got the actual carcass data back on them, you know, I went back and compared notes and said, okay, the GeneMax said this, and here's how the carcass data actually worked out. And you get some variances by individuals, but we broke it down into sire groups. And the GeneMax test had said there was one sire group that was going to do really good, and we had two sire groups that were going to be pretty close. And we got the carcass data back, and it couldn't have been any more spot on. I mean, it absolutely nailed the sire groups. And so I think as much as we want to do the individuals, but individuals can vary a lot. You know, one animal can get sick at some point in its life, and, you know, that could that'll follow it through in the rest of its career. And so we can never necessarily get away from some of those individual things that happen. But as a sire group, boy, that test told us how to market those cattle, and it was spot on. So, you know, research that. I always like talking to people that have used the technologies, you know, and find out how they've implemented them. And, you know, that's been fun for me to kind of share some of this information. And I always like sharing it with folks and talking about it and kind of how our genetics can maybe help their herd. And we've helped a lot of people start with some of the retained ownership programs. When we've been sending calves, we've taken some of our bull customers, and, you know, if they just want to throw a few calves on the truck with ours, we'll send them down there. They can get a little bit of a taste of how those cattle perform. You know, I'm always happy to be a resource. Look at all the tests, you know, start thinking how you could implement them into your herd. But I'll tell you that any of that data doesn't do any good sitting in a file cabinet. You've got to implement it. I think those are the main things to think about, and just start doing your research and talking to folks. Ask questions. That's what I do. I ask a lot of questions.
Me too. So thank you for your time today, Troy. I really appreciate it. Did we miss anything? Anything you wish I would ask you?
No, I just think it's exciting to me. I mean, sometimes we get down in the dumps about the business. We say, oh, prices are low, or we kind of feel like maybe we're victims of the market. And I feel like, you know, since we put this in, I feel like I'm making the market. I'm controlling as much as I possibly can the price we're going to get for these cattle. And every day the market tells us, look, prime cattle are worth 30, 40 bucks a hundred more than low choice or select or whatever the number is that day. And if the market's going to pay me more for those cattle and I can make those cattle, those cattle don't cost me any more to feed. Those cows don't cost me any more to run throughout the year. Just at the end of their life, those cattle are more valuable. And to me, that's what's exciting, is I feel like we're doing as much as we can to be a market maker instead of a market taker. And I don't know, that gets me pretty excited about the cattle business.
You know, this, what you guys are doing seems to give you more opportunities to jump off. You know, I mean,
yeah,
there are more opportunities along the way, just like you were saying. That 30, 40 pounds less in hot carcass weight was because they're not going to pay me anymore for them 3 weeks from now, and they're just going to cost me money. So I might as well jump off now and cash out while I can. So,
yeah, and you have those options. And even if someday we say, look, we don't want to retain ownership anymore, for whatever reason, doesn't work for us, we've got the GeneMax testing. We've got some carcass data. We've got information on these cattle now. And if we're going to try and sell them at some sort of a sale, you know, either a private treaty or through a sale barn, our cattle now have a story, a pretty solid one. And that at any point in those cattle's lives is valuable to the next guy. And so, we think, you know, we want to take as much advantage of our own, and we kind of want to be selfish and not share that with a cattle buyer. We'd like to take all that profit for ourselves. But, you know, like I say, if things change, we feel like we're setting ourselves up for success.
Very good. Yep. Telling the story of your cattle is important all along along that chain. So very cool. Troy, thank you for your time today.
Absolutely. It was fun visiting.
Really good stuff there with Troy. I really appreciate him just taking the time to sit down and talk a little bit about what they've been accomplishing through this practice of using the GeneMax test and some of those things. So I hope there's something there that you can implement on your operation. Coming up next week on the Working Cows Podcast, got a really interesting episode for episode 49 of the Working Cows Podcast. We're one closer to that special mystery guest for episode 50. We got Daniel Suarez coming on the show. He's from Mexico. We're going to talk to him a little bit about cattle adapted to their climate and some different things like that. So should be a very interesting episode, kind of a different region of the world that has a little bit or quite a few of its own unique challenges compared to maybe some of the places that are in the top of the downloads for the Working Cows Podcast, places like Texas and Nebraska and Kansas and California and Oklahoma and Colorado and some of those places. So Mexico providing some of its own unique challenges. I'm excited to talk to Daniel Suarez on episode 49 of the Working Cows Podcast.
We invite you to visit workingcows.net to subscribe to the show via iTunes or Stitcher. You'll also find detailed show notes pages, resources from our guests, and the industry leaders who have influenced them. For more ideas on putting your cows to work for you in a more profitable way, tune in next week.